So, great track coming out on Super Disco Edit. That is Between the Two and a lovely tune called Take a Little Time. And on the line, live from Los Angeles, is songwriter Teresa Wu Murray. Teresa, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Oh, thank you. I'm honored, actually, to be speaking with you. Thank you.
I mean, it's a great track. It must be... Did you know it was being re-released?
I did.
Well, I say re-released. That's a first release, isn't it?
No, it's an unreleased song, along with others from the band Between the Two. We were supposed to have a record deal back in somewhere like 1980.
Mm-hmm.
But just things happened.
Yeah.
And they were never released.
Oh, dear.
Until this year, the songs, two songs, were discovered by, Sound...
Yeah,
edits.
Super Disco
Sound
Edits.
Disco Edits.
Yeah.
Yes. Russell Payne.
Yeah.
And they released a 45 with two of our songs.
Excellent.
And I think it's actually sold out.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It was, certainly when I picked mine up, they were flying out. So congratulations on that. It's a great song. And it's just
Thank
right
you.
For today. There's a lot of interest in it, especially in the sort of circles that I move in, so congratulations on that. So, Teresa, how did it all start for you as a musician? You a keyboard player and vocalist, songwriter?
Actually, I do not sing.
Right.
You don't want to hear me sing.
Only in the shower.
I took lessons as a little kid, but never took it seriously until after I got out of college, where I was studying art.
Oh, right.
And I just fell into it and played in bands around Seattle,
mm-hmm.
a lot of cover bands and several bands, and actually a all-girl band that traveled around.
Yeah. Well, on the club circuit and bar circuit and things?
Pardon me?
Were you just playing like in the clubs and the bars?
Yes. It was just covers and... top 40 tunes,
yeah,
dance tunes, a lot of R&B, like
uh-huh.
with Wind and Fire, and...
So how did you come to form, how did you come to be part of Between the Two? Because that was quite a large ensemble, wasn't it?
Yes, I think there were 9 of us.
Great, and wasn't one of your members also a fashion designer, designing outfits for Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder?
Actually,
Bill
that
Whitten.
Is Bill Whitten.
Yeah.
Bill Whitten. Because he's passed away, actually.
Oh, bless. Oh, dear.
And a long time ago. And so we really feel like his name should be mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
And as he was our, he was the reason why the band was.
Uh-huh.
And he's the reason why these songs were recorded and written. And he would be really happy to know that they were finally, released and played on the radio. He's a renowned fashion designer. He's designed for Elton John.
Wow.
Earth, Wind and Fire.
Crikey.
Because
back in
Diamond,
the 70s...
Michael Jackson, he gave Michael Jackson that look with the, kind of the military...
Oh, yeah.
...jackets
yeah,
and
yeah.
the glove and the white...
Brilliant.
...the white socks.
So lovely.
He is the uncle of 2 members of the band, Between the Two.
Okay.
And he brought them out from Bessemer, Alabama to L.A.
Wow, that was a trip.
He was positive he was going to, make the group famous as
uh-huh.
stars. So they needed a little more keyboard help. And he knows my brother. My brother's a musician, too, Philip Wu. And Philip Wu and Ron Chu also produced the songs.
Oh, I see.
That were that you've heard.
Uh-huh.
So Philip said, my sister plays. And he called me up and said, I got you a job in L.A. And I said, okay, I'm coming.
And you were in Seattle at the time?
Yes.
Right. It's not just next door, though, is it? How many thousands of miles is it? It's a plane flight.
Is it 15? Oh. Something like that.
Wow.
So I moved to L.A. and joined the band,
mm-hmm.
and Bill had set up everything for us. It was like a musician's dream come true.
I gotta say, to
pay for everything. And
fantastic.
Made costumes for us and just said, all you have to do is play the music. play and write music.
Yeah, because yeah. Your previous experience had been playing bars and clubs, and now all of a sudden you were being looked after. You were in Los Angeles. That must have been such a trip, such a culture shock.
Yes, I landed in what's called West Hollywood.
Okay.
And the Workroom 27 was on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And he had rented out a studio for us to live in. So we all lived together and, practiced every day.
Yeah.
And then I would walk down the street to Workroom 27, which is where he made all his costumes. And that was fantastic.
Wow.
Because I'm an artist, actually,
uh-huh.
A visual artist, so it was really great. And we'd see all these people coming in, to be fitted. And I saw George Benson, and
mm-hmm.
Earth, Wind, and Fire, and the Jacksons, and just people, Billy Dee Williams.
Great.
So I was starstruck, yeah.
Absolutely. You're rubbing shoulders with your heroes, surely. It must have been... It must have been great. So what was life like as a band in Los Angeles at a time when music was really bustling in the city?
Were
you just hard at work,
actually,
and you missed it all?
There's things I don't know. We didn't have a lot of social media or any of it.
No.
I didn't know. I was sort of in a bubble. And then not too soon after I moved to L.A., Bill sent us out on tour.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his... idea was that we were going to become a tight band and get better and also perform
uh-huh.
and hone our, performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because his idea was he thought that a band shouldn't just get up there and play behind instruments. They should move around and entertain.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Costumes, that was his vision. And that's the same vision he applied to when he designed for Earth, Wind, and Fire and all that.
Uh-huh.
Groups. Commodores. So we went out, I think we were out for a year.
Wow.
And it was clubs. There were clubs too. We packed the clubs.
Yeah.
When we'd come to town, people would find out about us, and we were not like anyone else. And we were from Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute they knew about that, they everyone was starstruck, you're from Hollywood, and yeah.
Fantastic. So you're touring for a year, because touring, it's not all it's made up to be, is it? It's hard work. I mean,
yeah, we played six nights a week.
Wow.
And we drove. We had a van and a truck.
Uh-huh.
And all our equipment. We drove from town to town. And 1 year, I think it was 78, was the blizzard. There was this blizzard.
Right.
It's a record-breaking blizzard. Just snow-covered barns.
Uh-huh.
We were kind of out in the country. And they covered up semis on the freeway. And we were stuck in Findlay, Ohio for 7 weeks.
Wow.
Until it started to thaw. But everyone loved us, so we still worked.
Uh-huh.
And...
So tell me about the, you thought you got a recording contract, but unfortunately it fell through. How did that, how did you get picked up by the recording company? Was this, did you have a manager?
Bill was our manager.
Okay.
Bill Witten. And he was very connected in Hollywood, and he was connected to MCA, and they had a smaller label called Source Records.
Right.
And one time we were performing in Pittsburgh in a room called the Yellow Submarine. It was the basement of some club.
Okay.
And Bill shows up with some other people, and they are from Source Records. And I think I overheard them say, yeah, we'll sign them.
Right.
And then they left. So that was it. We had to go back to L.A.
Uh-huh.
And get ready to start recording. But then a glitch happened, which was disco.
Uh-huh.
And the original songs we had were all written prior to my joining the group. And they were very straight ahead R&B.
Right.
And the record company says, we're going to need some disco songs.
Uh-huh. And that's where you came in? That's where you came in? Did you help write?
Yes, I wrote. Bill gathered us and said, okay, they're not going to sign us until we write some disco songs.
Uh-huh.
We're looking at each other because I think we had an attitude about disco.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it just went wild in New York, didn't it? And so everybody else tried to cash in on the act, surely.
Oh, yeah. That's it. That's the key word, cash.
Absolutely.
And, so he says, I want you to start writing. And I had never written before.
Wow.
And so I was out and about, and I was on the bus. And all of a sudden, this melody came into my head. And then I kind of finished it, you know.
And that was it? Take a Little Time was born, yeah?
I finished all the words and everything, or I think that's how it happened. And I ran back to the studio, ran upstairs, and I said, I have a song. And these musicians in between the two, they're so talented.
Yeah.
They could sing. They just create stuff, you know, like they heard my melody, and then it just fell together.
Excellent. What was your musical influence then? I mean, when you joined the band, what were you listening to at the time?
I loved Earth, Wind, and Fire,
yeah.
Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
Some jazz. Pop music.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, I mean, you say it's a long time ago. It's 40 years
out.
Ago, unfortunately. It's a long time. But it must be some big surprise to find that your music's been picked up after all this time, because you did actually you recorded enough songs for two albums.
Yes. There's more, and we're hoping that.
I'm gonna say,
you know,
that was my next question. Is there any chance we're going to see release of any of the other material from those recordings?
I'm not doing the business talking, you know.
No,
discussions. I'm not in that loop. That's Flip or Ernest
mm-hmm.
Sykes, and. But I think there's other organizations that are releasing things.
Right.
I think.
There are lots of small labels picking up on the unreleased 70s tracks, yeah, which is where Super Disco Edits comes in. They're releasing a lot of stuff. And so hopefully somebody's got the rest of your master tapes from back in those days.
Yeah, we have them. It's like...
finding a label to put
on. I'm not that part of the business.
No.
I feel lucky to. I get word. Oh, it's going to be released. Like, really?
Great stuff. Because that sort of thing, it's really being picked up in England and Europe. There's a lot of interest in that sort of music at the moment.
How do you think that got started?
Actually, without boring you, I think there's a certain generation who are trying to relive the youth. I think that people have paid the mortgages off, the children have left home, and now they want to go out and enjoy themselves again. I mean, when I was a teenager, my mum and dad used to go to a local working men's club and sit there and chat to the people they work with. But nowadays, now I'm their age, we're going out dancing every weekend. It's really
yeah.
good, and we're still buying records, and we're still hungry for music, and everybody wants to find something that they've not heard before, and that's what's creating this demand.
I wish that could happen here, you know.
Right, so we're going to play out with the B-side to this track, which is My Next Step, written by Ernest Sykes. And it's another great tune. There's two classic sides on this 45 that's available from Super Disco Edits. And where can people buy your stuff? Is it available at Juno, online, CD Baby?
Actually, you know, I retired from the music business.
Oh, tell me about that. What do you do instead?
Well,
When you finish with the band, what do you do after that? Go back to art?
When I finished with the band, I went on to other bands.
Oh, right.
I kept doing it for a while. And actually, I just found on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
performance. I wasn't really performing. We were just sort of lip-syncing on Soul Train. Are you familiar
with that? Yeah. We used to have Soul Train in the 70s and 80s.
And I had never seen it, so that was one of the things I did. And I had joined another band, and we went to the South. And that was great. That was great to be... That was a ticket to get out and see the world,
yeah,
being a musician. But then I joined a band, and I met my husband.
Lovely.
George Murray,
mm-hmm,
who used to play with David Bowie.
Oh, really? I'm very fortunate to see David Bowie back in 1987. Excellent performer.
Yes. He had played with him in the 70s.
Yeah.
And so we got married, and we were still, this band, we were called DNA,
uh-huh,
Dance the Night Away.
Right.
We were, the music scene then was the Police, like the Police and Motley Crue.
Oh, right.
In L.A., they all got their start by playing these showcase nights,
uh-huh,
in the clubs around town. So we were trying to do that and hoping to attract a record deal, which we did, but then that fell through too.
Oh dear.
And so I said, I'm kind of tired of this, and I went to school for art.
Mm-hmm.
So I became a designer.
Lovely.
And did that, you know, from the 90s on. Still do it.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. So I do write some songs, but they're not very commercial. They're
right.
Kind of fun, maybe jazzy.
Oh, right. Do you write for people in particular?
Pardon me?
Do you write for people in particular, or do you sell your songs to publishers who then pass them on to other artists?
No, I haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay.
Maybe one of these days.
Right, Teresa, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and good luck in whatever it is you're doing, and I can't wait to hear some more of your recorded stuff. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you. I'm inspired now.
Oh, bless you.
Okay.